Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, if you work for a big local university, you're going to want to listen up because MIT, Yale, and NYU are being sued in separate class action lawsuits over the retirement plans that each university offers its employees. The suits allege that the universities did not adequately monitor fees charged by investment firms to administer those plans and that the universities didn't replace more expensive, poor-performing options with better ones. MIT, Yale, and NYU, by the way, each hold more than $3 billion in assets for their retirement plans. Now, we spoke a bit earlier with Jerome Schlichter. He's the lawyer representing the university's various plaintiffs in these class action suits, and he laid out his case against MIT.
It's our contention that employees of these universities have the same right to build their retirement assets as employees of private companies. The sponsor, the university in this case, has the duty, called the fiduciary duty, to put the employees' and retirees' interest at the top. And part of that duty includes obtaining reasonable fees for the investment choices that are put on the platform for them to choose from. We allege that wasn't done here. MIT has not protected its employees' retirement assets as they should.
That's lawyer Jerome Schlichter. And remember, he's basically alleging that MIT is offering retirement plans that charge its employees too much in fees, and that's costing them millions and millions of dollars. And in MIT's case, there's an additional wrinkle. Boston-based investment giant Fidelity administers the university's retirement plans, and Fidelity CEO Abigail Johnson is a member of the MIT Board of Trustees. Well, we reached out to MIT for comment. They sent a statement saying, quote, as a general practice, MIT does not comment on pending litigation. So let's take a step back here and talk about exactly what a university or any other nonprofit's responsibilities actually are to their employees when it comes to retirement plans. Helping us to do that is Teresa Ghilarducci. She's director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School. She's also a retirement security expert. She joins us from New York. Teresa Ghilarducci, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, glad to be here.
It's really great to have you. So, okay, lots of numbers and details and allegations in this case, but so give us broadly what you would say. What is a university's obligation when it comes to picking retirement options for its employees, especially since most universities operate as not-for-profit institutions?
You know, there's no difference between the responsibility of an employer that's in the profit sector or the nonprofit sector. All employers that sponsor a retirement plan, and they get a lot for sponsoring a retirement plan, the money that goes in it is tax-free. So the taxpayers basically are subsidizing every employer to provide these plans. And in return, the employer has sworn to follow the law, to follow a fiduciary responsibility. So universities, like any other employer, profit or not profit or nonprofit, has to follow the fiduciary rule if they offer a 401k plan.
Okay. And in most universities' cases, it's the equivalent 403b plan, roughly.
Yeah.
But
right.
So in the MIT case specifically, and regarding that fiduciary responsibility, I mean, the lawsuit alleges that MIT violated that responsibility because of what we were talking about earlier, that Fidelity CEO Abigail Johnson sits on the MIT board. I mean, the lawsuit also alleges that Fidelity, quote, has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to MIT, and that has influenced, the lawsuit says, the institution's financial decisions regarding retirement plans. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, that looks like the appearance of conflict. So, but that wouldn't really stand up in court as the reason why MIT employees have a bad choice of plans. It's that existence of Abigail Johnson, the CEO of Fidelity, being on the board and Fidelity donating to MIT that would provide a motive for MIT to do the action which looks like it's against the law, which is to not really scrub their plans every once in a while for high fees. A good fiduciary, really good pension hygiene, is to have a process built in where all your vendors, whether they be the administrator or the money manager, have to go through an evaluation process on a regular basis so that everybody is scrubbed, everybody is judged, and the ones that don't meet the criteria are thrown out. It looks like that MIT, once they got Fidelity to be their their plan administrator never went through that process. And it's that process, that lack of transparency and good governance and good judgment is what the lawsuit is alleging is against the law. The motive might be this other connection to Fidelity, but even if that wasn't there, the fact they didn't carefully manage their plan would by itself look like it violated the law.
So is another way of saying what a university's fiduciary responsibility would be, is it another way of saying that basically they should be providing the offering funds that are at the lowest cost and highest performing?
Yes. So a fiduciary is supposed to put all the interests of the participants, the employees and their beneficiaries, first.
Right. The reason why I ask that is because I'm putting myself in my own shoes and thinking my own retirement plan. Why would any university offer any fund that's not the rock bottom expense ratio index fund that performs on average just like the rest of the market does?
Yeah, right. That's a really good question. I'm going to just reframe your question a little bit.
Okay.
Why would any university or any employer not provide the funds that provide the best return for the least risk? And there's a couple of reasons. One is just plain laziness. The employer often in these 401k and 403b plans do not pay the administrative fees. So you could say, well, you know, what do they care?
And it's the employees who are paying the fees.
Yeah, the employees in these plans pay the fees. All right, so that's the malfeasance part of it, the lazy part of it, the not being very motivated part of it. What's alleged here is that it's more sinister, that they get kickbacks or they have a cozy arrangement with some of these financial managers, and so they know that these funds don't perform well. They know that their employees are losing out, but they still put those funds in the choice set for their employees. You know, I don't know what the court of law will determine is going on here, but surely these are not the best options. And you can see these three schools, MIT, NYU, Yale, and many others this week, I'm sure, that are going down a checklist. They're first saying, what kinds of dogs do we have in our array of choices for our employees? Mm-hmm. And let's make sure we have a process to get rid of these bad funds. Second, are there too many choices? NYU had hundreds and hundreds of funds for employees to choose from, and there's just sort of no human being or even a computer that can optimize their portfolio with so many choices. Yale, too, really brought the choices down from hundreds, you know, to a manageable 37. But it's mainly, and I'm a fiduciary of other pension funds, it's mainly not the outcome that we're judged by. We're judged on our process. And I think universities have been privileged institutions in our society, and they have not been brought up to good standards, or they're not following good standards.
So forgive me for interrupting here. So when you said that as a fiduciary, you're not generally judged by outcomes, but by process, is that the right way? Is that even the right way to be judging a fiduciary's performance?
Yeah, so you know why? Because if you follow the right process, you'll get the right outcome.
Okay.
If you have a process that says, I'm going to evaluate my administrator, my vendors, my investment managers over a three-year rolling period, then you're going to get the funds that have the best return for the least risk and the lowest fee.
Right. So I'm wondering, if you're – we have a lot of employees of universities who are certainly listening to this right now, and they must be wondering, well, what can I do still nevertheless? Because even 37 funds, it's tough to sort of optimize a portfolio out of 37 funds. And so how can we be confident? How can anyone be confident that the options that are being put forth are the ones that would be most beneficial to their retirement portfolio?
Yeah, well, you're right. Education is one of the biggest industries in Boston. And just like every other employee, they have to really trust their employer, but they should not. I would say that most people, if not all, don't have really good options. But here, let me give you some advice you can give to your listeners. First of all, make sure that you pick out the funds that are index funds. Mm-hmm. These are funds that usually are called index. Sometimes they're called passive. But there's a column that says what the fees are. And if the fees are really low, then bingo. Those are the funds you want to look at.
Yeah, you're looking for 0.01% fees,
yeah,
right?
And yeah. If you can't tell you what these funds are or what they're doing, you have the right to ask your employer to explain them. And the sad fact is that many human resource officers, many people who work for universities or any employer, can't explain it to their own employees.
Yeah.
It's a real scandal in this country.
Huh.
The do-it-yourself system doesn't work.
Or frequently they get referred right back to companies like Fidelity who are administering the plans. Well, Teresa Ghilarducci is director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy and Analysis at the New School and author of many books about retirement security, including How to Retire with Enough Money. Really look forward to having you back on the show someday. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.